most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to The Bruce Montalvo Show, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Bruce Montalvo Show, broadcasting from Los Angeles, California. Thank you for joining me, ladies and gentlemen. It's Sunday, February 24th, 2013. And I would like to remind my listening audience at this time of the great special our sponsor over at DonO'Neill.com is offering. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you could save up to 10% when you use the code name titled Bruce. Again, that's 10% on all reproductions of the legendary Southern California watercolor artist, Don O'Neill. Be sure to visit DonO'Neill.com. Now, joining me today is a very talented broadcaster, activist, and a true ambassador of civil liberties, ladies and gentlemen. All the way from the magnificent island of New Zealand, he hosts The Vinnie Eastwood Show, which airs on American Freedom Radio from 5 to 7 p.m. Central Time. Now, he's the host of The Lighter Side of Genocide. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome my guest on today's broadcast, Vinnie Eastwood, to the program. Hello, Vinnie. Thank you for joining us today. Let me put your audio up. All right. Thank you for joining us, brother.
I feel like I need a studio audience to be like maniacally clapping and stuff like that with my introduction. Like, it's Vinnie Eastwood.
Well, LA is clapping for you right now, brother. Thank you for being on.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me on and whatnot. I've been on so many other shows and I love it, man. I seem to be a much better guest than I am a host. Do you know what I'm saying?
No, not at all. I've heard your show quite a few times, man. You've had some phenomenal guests on. Now, I wanted to ask you, let's start off the show. I wanted to ask you about, it's really been 2 years since that devastating 7.1 quake that rocked New Zealand, the beautiful city of Christchurch. Seriously, one of the most devastating tremors to strike that region, I believe, since 1931. Now, my prayers go out to all those affected by those deadly earthquakes. Now, Vinnie, can you tell us how the people of New Zealand have rebuilt since those quakes and how the people have gathered to remember the lives lost in this being the second anniversary of those tremors, a tragedy that claimed over, I believe, 185 lives. Your thoughts?
Well, it's a three-pronged thing. In terms of people celebrating the anniversary, there was a there was a piece on television on Prime TV, which is kind of one of the much, much smaller sort of off-to-the-side sort of television channels, not any of the mainstream channels. They played a documentary called The Aftermath, which was made about a year ago, I think. On the first anniversary, it was released chronicling the earthquakes and what have you. Secondly, did you know that the head of FEMA and 9 U.S. congressmen were in Christchurch the day of the quake and got on a plane and left 2 hours before the quake hit, excluding the head of FEMA who stayed behind to coordinate the disaster, I mean the relief?
Wow, I did not know that.
Did you know that there is a HAARP facility 15 clicks from Christchurch?
Not at all, Vinny, not at all.
Did you know that about 40-plus reports of sonic booms coming through the sky were reported by average citizens on the day of the quake? Did you know that the New Zealand military was doing a drill, a disaster relief drill, in Lyttelton Harbour, which is right next to Christchurch, the day of the quake, and were ready with food and medical supplies the day of the quake?
Wow.
Did you know that people saw what they thought were meteors coming across the sky that were making sonic booms? No. Did you hear about the increase in chemtrail activity the day of the quake? Did you hear about the rainbow clouds the day of the quake? None of this ringing a bell? You know why? Because it doesn't get reported by mainstream media.
Absolutely.
I reported it. My friend Ben Vigen, who lives in the South Island, reported it. But they don't want to talk about HAARP. They don't want to talk about all these amazing coincidences, do they?
Absolutely not. Now, that brings me to my next point, Vinny. The military, they have admitted that chemtrails play an essential part in geoengineering. Now, I'm looking at an article here from Occupy Corporatism. It states the U.S. Department of Defense, the military, has been systematically blanketing our skies with what are known as chemtrails. This is known as strategic aerosol geoengineering, also what they call solar radiation management, a technique for blocking out the sun to prevent access from heat affecting the Earth's surface.
Hold on a second. What's the source of all life on Earth? The sun? So naturally, the military wants to block it out. Continue, sorry.
Right. Now, they admit that these scientists admit that they know the risks of climate change, but they all seem to be in cahoots. Vinny, your thoughts?
Yeah. We get chemtrails in New Zealand all the time. What was the question exactly? You know, is the military and the government and the eugenicists and things in cahoots? I don't know. Who owns the military?
Right.
It certainly ain't the people of the United States. Who gives all the orders for the military to go around and do all these secret black book projects, which I don't tell nobody about? They're black books. Nobody tells them about anything. Right. What is the military then? Is it something that's supposed to defend the United States against attacks from enemies? Or is it something that's supposed to attack the U.S. citizens against freedom-loving libertarians and such?
Really seems to be that way. Now, the article I was referring to, Vinny, is titled U.S. Climate Change Procedure Based on UN's Geoengineering Governance and Technology Policy. So it's basically the U.N. I mean, they can go to war without congressional authority, only with the U.N., and now the UN condones geoengineering and all this poison in our atmosphere, and it all goes unnoticed. Like you said, the mainstream media does nothing to report this, and it's really up to us, the alternative media, like people like yourself, who are reporting this, are at the front line, Vinny.
Well, I don't like the term alternative media, because that infers that there's some kind of media out there that's established and credible and what have you. I don't like that. I like to call us the new media, because therefore it infers that anybody else is old and crusty by comparison. And right. That's exactly the way it is. These people in the current media have no brains, have no credibility, have no nothing worth listening to, really. And I know this because I have interviewed people who have been in the mainstream media, most notably the author of Aircon, which is a poignant topic here, Ian Wishart, who was the host of the Sunday program here in New Zealand. It's our equivalent of 60 Minutes. And he told me that flat out, it's just funny, journalists are airheads. Okay? They have no idea what they're talking about. They have no idea what they're doing. And the most important and intellectual thoughts that are going through their head is about where their next Gucci handbag is coming from or what they're going to do on their next trip to Tahiti. Uh-huh. So, if you have morons informing morons, how much intelligence do you think is going to happen?
Not very much.
Not a whole lot. And intelligent people, in my opinion, have always been the minority anyway. But it doesn't mean that, you know, just because there's a majority of moronic zombies and fluoride heads and Maccas munching, stuck in traffic, slave job, working pieces of trash and filth and valueless waste of human life and air-sucking chemtrail-loving swine out there. It doesn't mean that we can't make a difference. And in fact, you have a look back through history. Who's actually traditionally made the difference? Has it been all the masses for in some reason coming together and overthrowing at tyrants? No. It's actually only been like, I don't know, between 1% and 5% of the population that's gotten together to overthrow the tyrants and taken the country in a different direction for good or for ill. That's all you really need is a small determined minority. So don't worry about the fact that everybody's an idiot listening to the mainstream media. Just be happy that there is a small amount of people listening to the new media who are informing themselves and know about topics like this, because they'll make the difference, because they take action, because they actually care. Right. What I've found is that the majority of society no longer cares about anything of value. And that's really sad. I think that if we were to change anything, really change anything, regardless of whether it's the climate that's changing or the geoengineering programs that are changing,
right,
this is the people right here, right now, people like you and I and the listeners to this radio program will be the ones to actually do said change, not some financed extreme banker confidant like the Lord and Savior Barack H. O'Barry Satoru. No, absolutely. I don't think he's going to make much of a fracking difference whatsoever. In terms of geoengineering, it's funny, you know how things come in threes, or as soon as you start looking at, as soon as you buy a car, you suddenly notice that everybody else is driving that car.
Right.
Well, I had Dane Wigington on my show the other day from geoengineeringwatch.org, and it's incidentally that you reading out an article from Occupy Corporatism, because Suzanne Posel and myself have partnered to create Guerrilla Media, the realguerrillamedia.com, at realguerrillamedia.com. So what's happening here, as far as Dane's concerned, is the chemtrail activity has done already irreparable damage to the climate. And we have methane coming out of the Arctic, and methane releases coming out of the Antarctic as well. When you put methane through water, particularly seawater, it acidifies it. And based upon the levels of methane releases, this occurs when there's a temperature variation or something like that that we've been having due to these geoengineering programs, not despite of them. Last time this happened, about 90% of all life in the oceans died, and about 70% of life on land died. The temperature increased so much and so dramatically that you couldn't live along the parallels of the Earth near the equator. Everything there just cooked and died. And, yeah, that's what we've basically got to look forward to if these geoengineering programs are not stopped. So, you know, people worry about rising sea levels in 100 years or something like that. I'm talking about our extermination is happening right now.
Right.
Okay? And Greenpeace ain't going to freaking tell you a dang thing about that.
Right. And, Vinny, there's an article here from Natural News also that states a Swedish Green Party leader, I believe her name is Pernilla Hagberg, she stated that it's not just a conspiracy theory anymore. You know, that it's the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, the NSA, they're all partnering up to modify atmospheric conditions via this deliberate aerosol spraying, these efforts to just spray these dangerous, like you stated, these poisons into our atmosphere.
Okay, and let's define what a conspiracy theory is. In order to define what a conspiracy theory is, you've got to define what conspiracy is. In the maxim of law, it is two or more people coming together to cause harm on another group of people without that group of people knowing about it.
Right.
It happens all the time. It's virtually the only thing that happens. You know, people tell me, Vinny, you know, not everything's a conspiracy, Vinny. And I say, well, yeah, I agree. Not everything's a conspiracy, just most things. And on top of that, you say the word conspiracy theory. I believe the first person to coin the phrase in an open public forum was a man named Richard Milhouse Nixon. He called Woodward and Bernstein conspiracy theorists when they were trying to expose him over the Watergate affair to discredit them. And he was later found out to be part of a conspiracy.
Right.
So the term conspiracy theorist was made up by somebody to demonize people who were telling the truth while they were engaged in a conspiracy.
Absolutely.
So I proudly call myself a conspiracy theorist. As far as I'm concerned, the definition of a conspiracy theorist is a person who believes, absolutely believes, that powerful people who have a lot of influence use their power to maintain or grow their influence. It seems pretty straightforward, doesn't it?
Pretty straightforward.
Now, the opposite end of the spectrum is a coincidence theorist, somebody who believes everything happens by pure coincidence. Lies don't exist. Subterfuge doesn't exist. Scumbaggery doesn't exist. Off-the-record conversations don't happen. People don't do deals behind backroom doors. If you had to define yourself as one of those two spectrums. Which one do you think sounds a hell of a lot more insane than the other? It's not the conspiracy theorist that sounds insane. It's the one who thinks that there's absolutely nothing going on. And this is what I've been telling people for years, is that the crazy people aren't the ones with the cardboard signs saying, oh my God, 9/11 was an inside job, or there's chemtrails being sprayed everywhere and what have you. It's actually the people who are looking at their shoes, walking along as if nothing's going on whatsoever. Those are the crazy ones.
Absolutely, Vinny. And it seems that maybe we could throw in some prominent world leaders in there as being conspiracy theorists, like Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, who stated during the Haiti earthquake, the disasters in Haiti, that he believed it was the U.S. Navy who was launching a powerful heart machine that they launched the test. It was a test drill.
Just like in Christchurch, the U.S. military was running disaster relief drills the day of that Haiti quake. Okay, and they had ships full of supplies and disaster relief already and raring to go before the quake even happened.
Right.
The same with the Boxing Day tsunami that happened quite a number of years ago. That there's now a movie coming out about. There were U.S. ships stationed offshore that were full of supplies and medical equipment and all of that kind of stuff, just waiting for that thing to happen. Okay, I'm wondering, you know. How often do we have just a regular, everyday, run-of-the-mill earthquake? You know, can't we just have a normal one like they have in LA every now and again, where things shake a little bit? You know, maybe a glass will fall off your shelf or whatever, and you just kind of go, okay, that's cool, and then keep talking on your cell phone. Those earthquakes don't happen very much.
Right.
I wish that would happen more regularly rather than these massive 7.8, 9.9, whatever, insane harp-caused earthquakes that are happening all over the place. And it seems like whenever something's hyped up in the media or there's a massive death count or whenever the United States basically has an interest to play there, this is what happens. It's usually a frickin' harp attack.
Absolutely. That's no coincidence, right?
Yeah. Now, apparently, a lot of Americans die of heart attacks.
I believe that, man. Now, the lamestream media, Vinny, has also been lying about another person you could throw in the conspiracy theorist, another world leader, Ahmadinejad of Iran. And, you know, the Western media always seems to twist his statements in regards to Israel. Now, he was quoted by Reuters as saying that Israel should be wiped off the map, when in fact, he said that Israel should not be on the map, meaning that the formation of the country was done was not done morally or legally. This via the UN Act. Your thoughts?
Well, see, I heard that, and the pronunciation is really important here. I'm good with pronunciation. Right. I'm told it's Mahmoud Ahmadinejad.
Mahmoud. Right.
Yeah. Like, you know how in Yiddish, you know, like Jewish and stuff, there's a vowel sound called. You know, like you're about to spit on somebody.
Right.
You know, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. And that's how it's pronounced. And what's very interesting is that I'll listen to a conspiracy talk radio show, and then I'll listen to a whole Ahmadinejad speech at the United Nations, and I'll compare them, and they're virtually the same thing. 9/11 was an inside job.
Right.
Israel was founded by Zionists who used terrorism in order to coerce people who are violent and unnecessarily dangerous people, and they've got heaps of nuclear warheads and they're trying to destroy people, and they've got a really hardcore intelligence agency called Mossad that is setting up stuff all over the place and had a hand in 9/11 and all of this kind of stuff. This is the leader of a nation.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, come on. And then, of course, you know what happens every time you tell the truth and you've got some form of credibility, and namely being the leader of a nation? You get demonized and misquoted and misrepresented. I had some crazed person I mentioned this on my radio show, I think a year back or something like that. Somebody mentioned on one of my YouTube channels, Vinny, you're a liar. Ahmadinejad said that he's going to wipe Israel off the face of the map. He said it thousands of times. And I said, okay, show me one time where he has said exactly that. Just one time. I'm not going to ask you to provide me 1,000 examples that you think are there. Just provide me one example. And he couldn't do it. The best he could do is a video of Reuters mistranslating his speech. And I've seen the real speech right. with the accurate translations directly from the UN website, saying instead of Zionism as a political ideology will eventually be wiped off the map. And it's misquoted as saying, I will wipe Israel off the map. There's two completely different things.
Right.
People don't know the difference between a Jew, a Zionist, and a Semite. Did you know that 80% of Jews are not Semitic?
Right.
Right? Zionism is like being a Republican. Okay, it's a political ideology.
Right.
Being a Jew is like being Christian. It's a religious ideology. And being Semitic is like being Italian. It's a genetic thing.
Right.
And there's many tribes of Israel. You know, there's Sephardi, which my friend Gilad Amir is, and he's a dance party promoter down here in New Zealand. Love him. There's Ashkenazi, which my producer Mitch is, and things like that. You know, there's a number of different tribes. People just don't know, have a freaking clue, right? And they also don't have a clue that in Israel, it was a country of, I think, 14 or 16 million people, I believe.
Right.
They had something like 4 or 8 million, I forget which, but massive, massive protests against the Israeli government and their treatment of the Palestinians. There were even Jews who were lighting themselves on fire,
right,
in protest. Numerous people self-immolating against the horrible things that are being done to the Palestinians by the Israeli regime. And notice how I use the word regime, because whenever you hear about any country that the United States doesn't like, it's called a regime. All right? It's not called an administration. It's not called a government. It's not called a leadership. It's not called an ideology. It's called a regime. And not only is it called a regime, it's called a regime many times. Regime, 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 regime.
Absolutely.
One more time. Regime. Just to make sure that it sinks in. It's ridiculous.
Oh, you're right. You're absolutely right. Now, Vinny. I wanted to have your thoughts on this also as well. Iranian president, since we're talking about HAARP, he also accused his enemies of enacting some type of sinister plan to create a drought or somehow destroy the rain clouds before they even reached Iran. Now, he stated this. Have you heard of this report?
No. I generally don't even follow the news or okay, in order to do what I'm doing,
right,
which is host a radio show 5 days a week for 2 hours a day, hopefully soon going to 3 hours a day, and do all the editing myself, all the archiving myself, all the YouTube videos by myself, I've had to cut out certain things. Like, you know, when you want to accomplish one thing you in your life, you have to realize that there's a lot of other things that are simply not entirely necessary, and you need to kind of get rid of them in order to accomplish and achieve what you want to. Well, I no longer follow people's blogs, anybody's blog. I no longer read articles, anybody's articles. I no longer watch videos, anybody's videos. And that's what I've had to sacrifice in order to make a radio show that has incredible content with massive guests, and it's all YouTubed on webcam and everything at the same time. So at any one time, I have no idea what people are releasing unless that particular person comes on my show and tells me about it.
Right, I got you.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm not terribly up with the play, as it were. I don't read books either. Instead of reading these books, or watching these documentaries, or reading these articles, I will interview the authors of said books, interview the filmmakers of said movies, and interview the writers of said articles.
Right. And you've had many wonderful guests. I mean, your broadcast, you've had G. Edward Griffin, who is absolutely a legend. I mean, that's the video that woke me up, Vinny, the capitalist conspiracy, as many others. It's been around for so long. Now, before we get into the people you've interviewed, can you let us know about how you first well, let our listening audience know a little bit about yourself, and let us also know about your days before you were a broadcaster, when you were, I believe you were working as a telecommunications, I believe.
Telemarketing and telecommunications, yes. Well, I think it goes a little bit before that. My first job, straight out of high school, was producing, writing, and directing my own play. And that was to raise enough money so I could go to university down in Otago, which is a city just south of Christchurch. While I was down there, I learned a number of things about life. Namely, if you're employed, your employer doesn't give a frack about you. Secondly, if you are friends with somebody, they aren't necessarily your friend. Thirdly, if you leave your house and go away for the weekend, your flatmates may and do steal everything in your room and don't even really try that hard to cover it up. Okay. And also, when I was down there, I started selling weed because I was very lonely. My girlfriend left back for Japan. My flatmate, who I'd gone down there with, who couldn't find a job, and I was supporting him. He owed me like $6,000 or something like that, which he never paid back. I was just doing it because I was really, really lonely. And it turned out one of those people that I was selling to was an informant and narc on me. And then I found out what the police are really about. When they didn't inform me of my rights before they took my my confession, and even though I confessed to absolutely everything they could have conceived of, including past dealing and current dealing, and literally handed them all the evidence that they wanted to, they didn't even have to search my room. I just saw them coming up the driveway, and I was like, oh, God, no. All right, so I grabbed everything, handed it to them. They go, there you go. There's my tins, there's my this, that, and the other. And they still made up evidence about me in court.
Oh, man.
Yeah, had my mother not Cheeky come down bastard. And spent 10 grand on a credit card on a lawyer, I may have spent up to 8 years in prison.
Wow.
For a first offense for possessing 13 grams of cannabis. Okay?
Oh, my God.
It is treated more seriously than manslaughter. It was the most traumatic experience that I've ever gone through in my life, and I don't want anybody to ever go through that. And after that, I kind of came back to Waiheke, went working and stuff like that, became a cannabis activist as well. And I think it was the reason why I left university eventually in my second year is I was doing a film and media course, and they asked us to write essays, and one of the essay options was anti-television discourse. So, you know, you write about how you like television, and for the very first time in my life, I actually put a lot of effort in. I read the source material. I put in a bibliography. I put in notes, referencing and things like that, because I found out that I didn't like television, but that other people who had been around and been writing for decades and decades also didn't like television for the same reasons that I didn't. And it was only once I started reading into what other people had said before me that I was in total agreement with.
Right.
And they gave me a D for that essay. And I was like, okay, this is BS. I'm never going to university again. So I became a telemarketer.
Right.
And I became the number one in the whole company, right? Like top of the boards, like number one. I was making more money and making more sales than anybody else could do, and I was the only one doing it incredibly honestly and genuinely and talking to people over the phone, never selling it to somebody who didn't want it or anything like that. And as far as I know, I was the only person really doing that and making those numbers. And so they promoted me to business account manager because I didn't want to do selling anymore. I wanted to help people, you know, make their lives a little bit better in some way. And I didn't manage to help anybody or make anybody's life better as a business account manager, because as a business account manager, you're still just a telemarketer, except you're selling to businesses instead of people who are in the residential.
Right.
So I got bored with that because I told them I didn't want to do it. and so I wrote a 7-page essay about what was wrong with the company. And we had a big meeting and there was a lot of discussion about it. And then about halfway through the meeting, the guy who was hosting the meeting, you know, the vice president of the company, gets a text message and goes, okay, I don't have time for this. I'm getting out of here. And nothing gets done. not a single issue or concern gets addressed. And I emailed him about 3 days later and go, so what's happening with all of these concerns that we raised? And every other business account manager fully agreed with and said that we should probably do something about it in order to improve the company and staff retention and training programs and what have you.
Right.
He says, as far as I'm concerned, the issue is closed. And then a couple of days later, my boss comes and invites me to the cafe next door, slaps a piece of paper down in front of me, said, Vinny, sign it. And I go, what am I signing? He says, well, we'll pay you 6 weeks' wages to leave. And I'm, what do you mean by leave? When? He goes, now. Like within 5 minutes? Yeah, preferably, if you can pack up your desk that quick.
Wow.
So I was like, okay, that's like $3,000+. I haven't had a summer holiday in quite some time. I think it was about December 16th at the time, and we have our summers around when you guys have your winters kind of thing. So I was just like, yeah, right. I'm gonna live off that for a bit. And got 2 jobs after that, once the money ran out, doing similar stuff, and just kind of realized that it's not just the one company that I was working for that were a bunch of sociopathic scum who really don't give a frack about their employees or their customers.
Right.
It was almost all the companies. And I was sick of being treated like a slave. I was watching documentaries and stuff. I mean, I piled like 160 documentaries in 6 months into my brain. You know, massive geometric increase in my amount of knowledge. And what was really getting to me is that I didn't like being a salesperson anymore. I was getting paid a decent wage, but I just didn't like it. I didn't like the rejection you would get from some people who didn't want to buy off you. And I didn't like the falsity that you had to be smiling and manipulative and things like that. And you couldn't just be yourself,
right?
You know? So I developed what I call employer phobia, which is a fear of being employed. And every time I've been nearly employed since then, I've had a panic attack, either the night before or kind of just during the interview. I can't work anymore, not for anybody else. I can only work with people. I can't work for anybody. You know what I'm saying?
I got you. Yeah,
and that's why I went out on the street. My last paycheck was, I think, close to $4,000 cash. And $11,900 worth of mall shopping vouchers. So I took those shopping vouchers and bought myself a Mac and a handy cam with a tripod. And I went out and I started filming protests. And I quickly learned that, my God, these people that are speaking in the speeches at the protest, or these people that are speaking with them through the megaphones and what have you, have incredible knowledge and background on these issues that they're protesting about. Whereas previously, you'd go and you'd see protest coverage on the news, and they'd make one statement, you know, sound bites, or as I call them, they're even smaller than sound bites, they're audio nibbles.
If even that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I decided that these would be the people that I'd actually go after and try to talk to extensively, and then get a decent quality video made for them and about the issue of the day and the protests and things like that. I became pretty popular on YouTube, and I was noticed by a guy named Mitch Santel, who became my producer later to be the co-host of a show called The American Freedom Report with Dave Von Kleist and Brent Johnson. And Dave Von Kleist had left, and I was one of the co-hosts that was being looked at. And they brought me on for a week, and people just responded very, very well to me. It was very rare that you have a New Zealander who knows more about America than a lot of Americans do.
Absolutely.
And eventually, the studio decided they didn't like Brent Johnson, and they liked me. And so they canceled our show and just gave it to me. And that was the start of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Now it's been nearly running for 3 years, and we've had people on like George Norrie, David Icke, and Gia Griffin, as you say. And yeah, it's just basically going from strength to strength. And I don't discriminate per se, because I don't have a bar that people have to get under. Like, it doesn't matter to me how big you are, how little you are, or whatever. If one of my listeners suggests that you come on as a guest, I bring you on as a guest, whether it's an hour or 2 hours, doesn't matter. because I can't be bothered reading your blog, can't be bothered researching who you are, and I'm a hell of a lot better at getting to know people during the course of a conversation than I am at researching them off of their own information.
Absolutely. And I could totally agree with you on that, Benny. Now, also, I've heard you refer to Alex Jones's broadcast as being one of the focal points for you in your career, as many of us journalists, for lack of a better word, alternative media journalists out here. Now, I myself, I had an article published by InfoWars. I was a contestant in their last year's reporter contest. Now, having investigated InfoWars since that publication, I've found out that Alex Jones has pretty much omitted facts from his audience regarding 9/11 truth, even cancer cures, providing fear rather than solutions to his audience. I mean, seriously, you could do a Google search. I mean, have people forgotten this guy's shameless Y2K broadcast, the fear-mongering that happened during that broadcast? And if you haven't, ladies and gentlemen, please Google it, Y2K, Alex Jones, Y2K. Now, he has also deliberately hired a member of the shadow government via Stratfor. That's global intelligence out there in Austin, Texas. And he's got his cronies, his reporters, Dan Bidondi, Darren McBreen, basically covering up the fact that they hired this person. Now, InfoWars has also been caught with their hands in the cookie jar, spreading misinformation. Recently, there is an article that was published that pretty much caused internet hysteria, stating that the DHS purchased, I believe, 21.6 million rounds of ammo, when in fact the correct amount was 240,000 or so.
Yeah, that was exposed by Occupy Corporatism, our mutual friend Suzanne Posel there.
Absolutely.
I work for AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Well, I work with AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Danny right. Romero used to be Alex Jones's producer. And as soon as I knew that, you know, I was a big admirer of Alex Jones. But then he started to tell me stories of how he was driving back to the studio and he'd be listening to Alex Jones on the air going, "Oh, my God, the new world order is going to kill us all." Oh, my God, I just hope to God and everything that they don't kill my family. And then he pulls up to the studio and Alex has finished the show. And he's like, "Hey, Danny Romero, how's it going?" And it's just like, it's totally fake.
Right.
Totally fake.
The shtick.
Right. Now, be that as it may. And this isn't the only thing. You know, you have a look at Jack Blood. If you have a look at if you Google Jack Blood, Alex Jones,
Mike Rivero. Also, I don't mean to cut you off, but you've interviewed Jack Blood. You've interviewed Mike Rivero. You've interviewed Sherry Kane, Dr. Leonard Horowitz, people who are actually suing Jones. Now, people also forget. I mean, this man starred in the blatantly Masonic film A Scanner Darkly. He's marginalized the truth movement in my eyes. He's sabotaged the pro-Second Amendment rallies in Austin in his past. I mean, really, this guy is a fear-monger extraordinaire, and he needs to be exposed.
Well, you know, and this is the difficulty. How do you expose somebody who controls the audience? How do you expose somebody who has the massive apparatus? How do you expose somebody who is more or less responsible for you waking up in the first place?
Right, that is the dilemma there.
Okay, he has stolen advertisers off of Danny Romero. He has stopped advertising silver products from Dr. Leonard G. Horowitz and Sherry Kane's Healthy World Affiliates program and replaced it with silver products that are under a patent by the Department of Defense.
Right.
He has stolen a transmitter after coercing a partner of Danny Romero off him that was getting 50,000 homes. He was calling up Jack Blood and his friends and playing them off against each other. This is like Jack Blood told me that he was sitting at a table eating dinner with one of his mates. And his phone rings, and it's Alex Jones saying that his friend across the table was demonizing him and was going behind his back and doing all this kind of stuff, yada, yada, yada. And he goes, "Okay, Alex, okay," as he's looking at his friend. And then he hangs up the phone, and then his friend's cell phone rings, and it's Alex Jones telling his friend that Jack Blood's setting you up and going behind your back and doing all of this kind of stuff. He knows the New World Order tactics of divide and conquer. He knows the propaganda machines. He knows how it all works. And unfortunately, he uses it against us. Now, be that as it may, the fact that he's a liar, a megalomaniac, these are just my opinions based upon the evidence. If he's willing to come on and debate and things like that, I'll be more than open to it, because I really don't like judging people until I've gotten a chance to speak to the horse through the horse's mouth, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But be that as it may, he has done more good for this truth movement and woken up more people than any other factor. Any other singular individual that you can point to that it had more influence and gotten more people off their ass and getting out there, you cannot point to anybody except Alex Jones.
Right. Many
okay?
of us broadcasters state him as an inspiration in a way.
Okay. Now, see, that's the thing. You've got to take the good with the bad when you look at Alex Jones. You know, and personally, every now and again, I still do listen to his radio show. And I noticed something yesterday. Day before yesterday, when I was listening to a show for about maybe 20 minutes before my broadcast. And it was repetition. That's how he gets you. That's how he wakes you up, through constant repetition. Namely, the thing that I hear him repeating the most is, we can win. We can beat these New World Order globalist slime bags. That's the reason why he inspires people to get off their ass, because although he's talking about really, really scary stuff, he keeps constantly reinforcing the fact that we can beat them if we did something. Okay, and that was a very important lesson for me to learn personally. And I don't know about you, but I found that when you're trying to clear your voice, you're like, I found that actually the best way to clear your throat is actually to do an Alex Jones impression and say the word derivatives. No, seriously, it's like derivatives. See, throat is clear. We are now ready for air. Derivatives.
That sounds like a croaking frog or something.
It works perfectly. I don't understand the mechanism, but that's how it works nonetheless.
Absolutely. Now, Vinny, moving on, man. Our listening audience, tell them about your interview with the acclaimed British author David Icke, a man who claims there's a reptilian bloodline that actually rules the world. Your thoughts?
Well, what's interesting is that he didn't talk about the reptilian bloodline in his interview with me. What he talked about is a collection of entities that were learned about in writings of a people called the Gnostics way back in the day.
Right.
And he says that it's an entity called Archons, kind of like demon possession. And these archons have an obsession with hierarchy, and they have a lot of jealousy, malice, cruelty. They have no conscience. In essence, you would call them a psychopath, and that's what Icke believes is infecting the ruling elite, is archontic entities that control their actions and thoughts and behaviors, are capable of projecting different realities and manipulating people around them to see what they want to see and things like this. It's actually a very straightforward thing.
Right.
And I asked him, you know, David, you've walked the earth and you've done 50 countries, I think, you've been to. On your speaking tours or travels and research and what have you. Have you ever stepped off the plane in any one of those countries and not instantly recognized the apparatus of the New World Order around you? And he's like, you know what? No. Every time I step off a plane, there's the such and such branch of the New World Order there in front of you. And then the language might be different, the uniforms might be different,
right,
but they're the same frickin' apparatus. And that's how you know it's a global conspiracy, because it's happening everywhere.
Right.
And I'm very proud that I was able to speak at his conference. when he came here to New Zealand. As far as I know, I'm kind of the only person who's gotten to speak at a David Icke conference other than his wife, who introduced him a couple of times, let alone being the only New Zealander being able to do that. So, you know, everybody's got their own opinions on stuff, and what people tend to do is try to judge others and say that your opinion's crazy. And my opinion is, look, if you think that the world makes sense, you're crazy.
Right.
You know, the reality is insane. It always has been. And there's an old saying that's saying, fiction has to make sense, whereas the truth really doesn't.
Absolutely. Now, that was a great interview, by the way, that you conducted with David Icke. Another great interview, and we spoke about him earlier, the legendary G. Edward Griffin, writer and documentary film producer. Now, I'll say it right here on air. That is the man that woke me up, ladies and gentlemen, the video, The Capitalist Conspiracy. Tell us about your interview with the legendary G. Edward Griffin.
Well, I've interviewed him twice. First time I interviewed him was during my first year in radio. And I think I have a quotation here from him somewhere. Let me see if I can find it. Something along the lines of, you know, I almost hate to leave this show, Vinny, because he's having so much fun. And you know, I said to him, you know, Ed, I don't want you to leave either, you bastard. And I think I'm the only one who's ever gotten away with calling G. Edward Griffin a bastard on the radio. But he after that very first interview, I created such an impression on him with who I am and what I've been doing for these years, just in activism before getting a radio show, that he put me on his Hall of Honor.
Right.
On Freedom Force International. That was like, whoa. Because, you know, you got the top people up there being represented, you know, Jack Blood and Alex Jones and Sheriff Richard Mack, Catherine Austin Fitz. To be on that list was of such privilege and honor to me,
right,
that it kind of motivated me even more so in my journey to expose scumbaggery and help this. Basically, my goal isn't necessarily to help myself per se. I'm not really seeking fame or fortune or whatever for myself. Any fame or fortune that I have, I believe, is actually owed to the people who gave me said fame, who gave me said fortune. For instance, my friend James Wright, who's exposing the 33rd degree of Freemasonry, was recently locked in a mental institution.
Wow.
And he was strapped to a chair and forced to watch Sesame Street and Christina Aguilera Disney movies and things like that. And he told me about this, and I mentioned it on my radio broadcast, made an appeal for people to donate to him so that he can buy gas so he can get to California. And his publisher heard me say that, and they actually called up this institution and got him the heck out of there. And that would not have happened had I not mentioned it. And this is what I mean by power. If you've got the ability to help people via the words of your voice, via the broadcasting of your words, you can make a frickin' difference. And if you choose to use that to enrich yourself or to increase your own audience, as opposed to helping people who have no ability to reach said audience, who desperately need help of people who might be listening, it is an abdication of your responsibility to humanity, in my opinion. So whatever power I get, that is the power that I pass on to other people so that other people can hear about what's happening to them and come and help them. I can't help everybody. I'm simply I'm a glorified disc jockey as far as I'm concerned. I'm sitting here, I'm playing the music and what have you. I didn't create any of this music. I didn't do any of this research. I didn't write any of these books. I didn't make any of these documentaries. These people did.
Right.
But the thing is, nobody knows that they did. And I have the ability to get the word out there. That is my one and really only function. Any money that I have, I'm usually just paying bills and perhaps if I'm lucky, get some new equipment and what have you. But ultimately, it's about helping people get the coverage that they deserve, because otherwise they would never get it. They would never get it.
Absolutely.
If I didn't take personal responsibility for making sure that they do.
Right.
And you know, this is a really powerful position, being able to broadcast to people. And I acknowledge the relationship that I have now got something that I've always desired, the power to do good.
Absolutely. Thank you, Vinny, so much. Unfortunately, we are out of time. But I look forward, man, to having you on many more times in the near future. Thank you, Vinny, for being on. And let our listening audience know where they could catch the Vinny Eastwood Show.
Well, you know, if you just Google Vinny Eastwood, it's Vinny with a Y and two N's. Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question. Eastwood like Clint Eastwood, as in, go ahead, make my news. And you can also check it out at realguerrillamedia.com. That's realguerrillamedia.com. Gorilla like a soldier, not like an ape, although I am rather large. 6'4" and counting. But yeah,
saw that, man. You're definitely a guy that I would like to have in next to me on a bar fight, man. If I was ever in trouble getting in a fight, I'd like to have you on my team, man. Kicking.
I hate violence so much.
Of course, my
dad was violent with me, and I've never been able to lay a finger on anybody since the age of 15, kind of thing. Like it's really, yeah. I don't know. I kind of verge going into
a
fetal
very nice
position.
No, I got you, man. You're a very nice guy, Vinny. Thank you so much for being on, and we look forward to having you on, like I said, many more times on the show. Thank you so much.
Well, man, that's an honor thing, you know. Please, I want to come back on, like, tomorrow if it was possible. But
we'll book in the future. Thank you, Vinny, for being on.
Cheers, Bruce.
Thank you.
Bye, man.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Vinny Eastwood from The Vinny Eastwood Show. Now, unfortunately, we're out of time, ladies and gentlemen. You could catch our broadcast here every Sunday at 12 noon Pacific Standard Time live here at LA Talk Radio. I'm also in the mix of getting a new time schedule for KCAAradio.com, but you can check out my podcast at KCAAradio.com. Be sure to check out my great friends over at eSpyMall.com, PierceColloids.com, and RandBook.com. For everyone here at American Freedom Fighter Press and Montalvo Report, I am Bruce Montalvo, reminding you that the freedom of the press is our right and our responsibility. Till next time.
You're listening to The Bruce Montalvo Show, right here on LA Talk Radio.